This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell has been on the job since the end of September, and he's been working to implement changes to reduce the city's crime rate. Chief Blackwell joins us to discuss his tenure so far and what's to come. You can join the conversation. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Again, 513-419-7100. Chief Blackwell, thanks for being here this afternoon.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
You were essentially an assistant police chief in Columbus, Ohio, before you became the chief here in Cincinnati. From when you were in Columbus, what were your perceptions of Cincinnati and its police department?
Wow. That's a heck of a first question. Well, it changed over time, actually. I had a few friends with Cincinnati PD who I knew back in the civil unrest time period.
We're talking around 2001.
2001, yeah. Correct. And I'll never forget, I was talking to one of them about it, just kind of incredulously asking, what the heck is going on in Cincinnati? I mean, it was getting worldwide, obviously national and worldwide attention for all the wrong reasons. So I think for a while there, a lot of people in our profession, especially the leadership in our profession, had a negative feeling about the way policing was done in Cincinnati.
And from that came one of the bigger success stories of the police department, which was the racial collaborative agreement, which was negotiated in 2002. And actually, you and Mayor Cranley had the opportunity, I think, to go to New York City last week and talk to, at the request of the Department of Justice, to talk about that to other police departments.
Right. You did your homework, didn't you? A lot of people don't know about that, but we did. And it was a fantastic summit, roundtable discussion, if you will, with a lot of leaders from around the United States talking about the role of race in policing and some of the impacts that it has.
What did you tell them about the situation in Cincinnati and how it's evolved over the years?
Surprisingly, Cincinnati's reputation now on a national level is very good. And so the dialogue or rhetoric that we get when we're outside of our environment here is all positive, from the collaborative to excellence is what I like to call it. And we are highly regarded now in the area of policing. Our reputation is solid and stellar, not only here in the city, but in the state and the country as well.
Do you know if that's been copied? I mean, other cities have talked about it, but is there maybe, like, I don't know, an exact copy is the right word, but are there other places in the country that are adopting this collaborative approach?
Absolutely. Our members, our assistant chiefs, myself, several members from the department are asked to travel and collaborate with other cities on a weekly basis to talk about collaborative agreements, how you implement one, how do you write one up, how do you sustain it, how do you get through it, because it wasn't a fun time here by any means in this community, just like it isn't a fun time right now in Seattle and Albuquerque and other cities that are having some issues.
Well, I know Mayor Cranley had a press briefing, I guess it was a week before you all were going to New York, and he said you were going there to present on the collaborative, but he also wanted to go there to maybe learn from other departments what they're doing to address, especially here in Cincinnati, the homicide rate. So did you take away anything from that forum that you can bring back here and use to address the crime rate?
I did, actually. We, you know, there were a lot of very intellectual police leaders there from all across the country, big departments and small departments, and just good leadership that was talking candidly about what they're doing in their jurisdictions to solve violent crime. So I sat with the assistant chief of New York City and the chief of Chicago. I sat right next to those two. And we had some really good offline discussions as well as while the conference was going on. And homicide is a tough thing to tackle. You know, a lot of people, because it is the most visible felonious crime that we have, a lot of people have some misconceptions about how you address that form of violent crime and how you can eradicate it, and it's difficult.
You say there are misconceptions. What are those misconceptions?
Well, one of them is that the more officers you have, the lower the homicide rate will be, and that's just that correlation has no statistical reliability. You know, you have to there are things you do in the community that I think can impact homicides, but a lot of them don't deal with enforcement. A lot of them deal with engagement and relationship building and bolstering the other social services, if you will, that contribute to violent crime in urban cores of the United States. There are a whole host of social issues. When you talk about poverty and lack of education and post-traumatic stress that a lot of young people have by virtue of living in high-violence neighborhoods, psychologists are saying now that these young people have PTSD to a high level.
And are these, is it also a matter of police presence? Not necessarily numbers of police officers, but more visible police officers in high risk areas.
You know what? It is a matter of police visibility and presence, but it has to be the right type of presence.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be a situation where the residents of the community feel like their neighborhood is being over-policed. You know, they don't like that, because at the end of the day, we're talking about a very small 0.5% of the population of Cincinnati, or any major city for that matter, that is involved in felonious crime. But we spend about, 90% of our resources chasing, or trying to eradicate criminals that make up less than 0.5% of our population.
How do you strike that balance between over-policing and not doing enough?
Well, I think you do it like we do it here. You do it with evidence-based practices. You rely heavily on what the data. So we're a data-driven department. We do an enormous amount of statistical analysis and research. We partner with the University of Cincinnati and Dr. Robin Engel and others to help keep us guided in the right direction and focused and on the right platform for enforcement. And then it's a matter of, what our goals are here in Cincinnati and how we want to deliver those police services. So there's a lot that goes into how we police, but at the end of the day, it's about the relationship between officers and the communities that they serve, because we're in a period right now where you both know that we have diminished resources, we have diminished manpower, we have diminished technology, all of that. Most governments are suffering from that. So we have to get more from our relationship with people.
When you talk about, I know this was an issue a couple of years ago, building those relationships in the community, there was a thought that you could do that with foot patrols when officers were actually walking the beat and interacting with citizens. What's your philosophy on that?
You're absolutely on the right stack of mail. That's my philosophy.
Yeah.
In fact, I just started a unit here called the Quality of Life Enhancement Teams, where we're going to put 2 foot patrol officers on each of the districts in Cincinnati, including the central business sector. Because it's my opinion and my belief in the 30 years I've been in law enforcement that when people can talk to a cop, when they can say hi to the officer, and he or she is not driving by with the windows up because they have the air on in the summer, or the windows up because the heat's on in the winter, and they can actually stop and engage people and develop relationships, you'd be surprised at what happens when you have that exchange of information.
Several years ago, Cincinnati was very successful with the SERV program, Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence, and then, as you said, diminished resources, funding for that was scaled back. It might have been eliminated altogether. And Mayor John Cranley has talked that that's something that he wants to reinstate. I think you've even praised it. And we could do a whole hour, I'm sure, on SERV, but just as briefly as you can, talk about what that program does, and especially, if you would, the part about the call-outs.
Right. SERV is a national model. Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence. As you said, we have reconstituted, and we are re-engaged with the SERV platform here. It's something that I wanted and Mayor Cranley wanted, and so we are back on track with SERV. Make no mistake about that. The call-in, or the call, that portion of it has to do with how we connect with people who are on our radar, and we know they are likely to be involved in crime. They're either a former criminal.
I was going to say we call them potential bad guys.
Or potential bad guys, people likely to be victimized based upon the relationships and who they hang out with, usually what we call is gang member involved or group member involved, GMI. And you know, interestingly enough, I was also in D.C. 2 weeks ago to help a group that I belong to called Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. And we went to visit Senator Boehner and Senator Portman and others to talk about funding for this program. And in a nutshell, we were asking for the funding to be kept in place that dealt with single-parent homes when the single mothers have a child 0 to 3 years of age. And one of the most important things in that program is that there was a call-out process where we actually, healthcare providers and social workers actually visit that household to help that mom develop good parenting skills. Well, how ironic is it that in the serve model, we're also doing call-outs, but after usually that young person has grown up and developed a framework of criminality, if you will. So if we invest in the front end, it's my, you know, my honest belief that if you invest in the front end with young people and families and communities, I think you have a better chance of preventing crime and not just reacting to crime.
There was a time in the city when police chief, not your predecessor, but before that, wouldn't even use the word gang, denied it, said it didn't exist. That's not the case, is it?
That's not the case.
What is the truth of the matter?
The truth of the matter is we know here that we have somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 known gang members in the city, and we are trying to deal with that emerging or growing trend, if you will, here in Cincinnati, and deal with it appropriately. I think you have to recognize that it is a problem before you can begin to deal with it, and I certainly believe it is, and my command staff does as well. So we've taken steps to address the emerging gang problem and the emerging youth crime problem as a whole. A lot of the felonious and the high-profile criminality that we see here in the city is not necessarily gang or group-related, but it's still youth-related, and it has to be stopped. We've had 3 14-year-olds killed this year, and a 20-year-old was murdered yesterday, almost in the same neighborhood. So it is unacceptable, the level of violent crime that we have in Cincinnati. And we are taking steps to address that.
You, I think, and I don't know if it's a continuing program, but I know one way you're reaching out to young people is basketball. And I think that just kicked off or has already kicked off. And is that something that was a one-time thing? Is that a weekly league type thing? How does that work?
Well, it's called H3 Cincy. And the three H's are hoops, heart, hope. It is a 10-week character, integrity, and leadership program where we use basketball as the hook to get young people in the door. If I tried to go to the rec centers here in Cincinnati and get 240 young people, 10 to 19, like we currently have, to come and listen to me lecture to them, I'd have my son and maybe your son there in the audience, you know? So we use basketball as that hook to get the young people in the door. It's age 10 to 19. We feed the kids every week. They go through a one-hour character integrity leadership presentation on a myriad of topics from conflict resolution to financial literacy. After they go through that, the 15-year-olds on up go into the gym to compete in basketball. The 10 to 14-year-olds go into the rec center part of the room to play Xbox basketball tournaments. They're bringing their young brothers and sisters. Their parents are coming. And we know for certain that at Evanston, Bush, and Lincoln Rec Center on Friday nights, this is week 7 for us. In fact, this week, if anyone is interested, the University of Cincinnati basketball coach has told us that he's going to have his players there to address the young people at Bush Recreation Center. What a phenomenal thing to do, because they, you know, a lot of young people look up to athletes, college athletes, as role models. So what a wonderful thing for him and his staff to do to bring those young men by to have them share some of their experiences with our young people in the rec centers.
And I think you also testified at a council committee. That was one thing you were doing, but I think you have a couple of other programs where you're actually taking things into the classroom.
Absolutely. We want to be engaged in young people's lives. We want to build relationships when they're young, and we want to do our part to help them succeed in life. So we're going to be bringing the GREAT program. The GREAT acronym stands for Gang Resistance Education and Training. That'll be taught next year to 5th and 6th graders. It's very similar to the DARE program. We have our summer cadet program. We have the police explorers. We have our city camp, which is the city acronym, stands for Children in Trauma Intervention. We have our truancy intervention program. We're reconstituting our PAL, CPAL, which is Cincinnati Police Activities League. So we have a very robust youth engagement platform that I believe will help us overall in our strategic efforts to fight crime and to build a stronger community.
I think you also did a listening session where you went out to each district, and I know there was one poor district that it seemed like every time you scheduled it, it was 15 below. It was 15 below zero, but I think you finally got that one done.
No, we didn't.
Oh, you didn't?
That's those Hyde Park folks.
Yeah.
District 2, Captain Butler. Every time we tried to schedule it was below zero.
You got four out of
five. Four out of five. However, we are going to schedule that fifth one.
What did you hear from folks when you were out on those listening tours?
We heard a lot about street crime. We heard a lot about response times being unacceptable.
And that's where we're sometimes talking about code zero.
Code zero.
Where there's no officer available to respond.
Right.
And that's not necessarily a serious incident, but just a radio run that maybe like a robber report or something like that, you just don't have the officers to respond.
Right. A burglary alarm, a non-emergency run, and every one of the officers on each district is tied up on a current run. So folks are having to wait an inordinate length of time, sometimes 70, 80, 90 minutes, for a police officer to come by. So we want to help that situation with technology, with a more robust webpage, and with a telephone crime reporting unit that is beefed up so folks can call in on those non-emergency crimes where they just simply need a report for insurance purposes and things like that, where there's zero solvability. We want to be able to make that available to the folks of Cincinnati so that we don't have to be so stressed and go from run to run to run, because what happens is when that condition exists, you never get in front of crime. You're chasing your tail all day.
You talked about earlier that, you know, to deal with the crime rate, you can't necessarily just put more officers on the street. There's no correlation that more officers reduces the crime rate. But at the same time, I think you've told council, and the head of the FOP has told council, that your staffing is at a critical point right
now.
We
believe so. That is correct.
And I think the complement that you're allowed to have is 1135, something like that. You're closer to 950.
Right.
And if things go as planned, you may be able to add to those numbers with your first recruit class in several years starting later this summer.
Well, actually, we're going to start in about 2 weeks with a lateral recruit class that we're putting the finishing touches on.
And those are already trained police officers?
That is correct. Yeah. These are already trained officers from Ohio that have their OPATA certificate.
That was an issue with the former police chief, not you.
He's a good friend of mine, so I'm not going to go there. But, this class is almost ready to seat. It'll be somewhere between 20 and 25 police officers from other agencies throughout the state. And then later this summer, we'll have a full-blown recruit class somewhere in September, October.
Now, with the lateral transfers, how much training do they have to go through? And since they're already certified, does that mean that they have to go through, I think they normally, once you graduate them, those new officers ride along with an already veteran officer. Will the lateral transfers have to do that too?
Yes, they will. They will, because we still want them to understand how to police Cincinnati. So they go through an abbreviated academy experience. About a third of the time as a normal recruit, and they'll go through an abbreviated field training experience, which you just spoke of, about a third of the time as well. But they will be boots on the ground before the end of the summer.
Are these lateral transfers, are these people from smaller departments for the most part?
For the most part, absolutely.
Yeah. Suburban departments, that kind of thing,
right.
Or small town departments.
Right, but they are all PATA certified, full-time law enforcement officers. They've been vetted like a normal recruit would be. They've gone through the background investigation, the psychological, everything, the polygraph. So we feel good about the class. They will be starting, I believe it's May 11th or 12th.
I think the city police department had experience a couple years ago where they maybe hired some officers from Cleveland who had been laid off, and then they got recalled in Cleveland. Now, that's not necessarily the same with these folks, correct?
Absolutely not the same. It's a totally different environment. We knew then that those cops had been laid off, and there was a good chance that they may go back. I think only two of those Cleveland individuals are still with us. This process is a lot different. I thought it would do what it has done. It's given some younger officers from other smaller agencies the chance to come and be with the best police agency in the United States, and that is right here in Cincinnati.
When Chief Craig was here, he had a department audit, and one thing that, I mean, he was big on that audit found was the department was top-heavy on supervisors compared to beat officers. And he even thinned out the ranks of, I think there used to be 5 or 6 assistant police chiefs. Do you buy into that philosophy that there needs to be fewer officer or fewer captains, lieutenants, sergeants?
Absolutely. I always have. As you run thin on the street, like we are here and most municipalities are, I think the responsible chief says, how can we thin out the command structure a little bit and allow there to be more boots on the ground engaged in real crime-fighting activities and real community engagement activities? So he did reduce the command staff here, and it has stayed at those levels.
As you begin to work on a budget for the council will adopt by the end of June for that will take effect July the 1st. Do you know yet your marching orders from the city manager? I know some departments have been told, cut this percentage, other departments, give me scenarios, 7%, 10%. Does that apply to the police department, or are you going to be exempt from any budget?
Absolutely, it applies to us. I mean, we're 70% of the budget, myself and Chief Braun with fire. And so we've already been given our marching orders to have significant reductions. We have met those requirements that City Manager Stiles has put on us. We've also been able to turn some funds back over from this year's budget due to the fact that we were good stewards with taxpayer dollars. So we're trying to run the most efficient operation that we can. We understand that finances are short and that we're in a fiscally tight situation. But at the same time, I think the city recognizes that we're at a critical point staffing-wise, so you have competing interests.
What kind of money-wise, what kind of cut are you looking at? And I'm assuming that would not affect your street strength.
It will not. We're looking at somewhere between 7 to 10%.
And you can absorb that through things that don't take officers off the street? That sounds,
correct.
I mean, I hear 7% of 70. That sounds like a pretty good-sized number.
That's a real good-sized number. But I think it also demonstrates another thing. There are a lot of city employees, a lot of City of Cincinnati employees that have bore the brunt of cuts and things like that. And so as the police department, I think we're the biggest department in the city. We want the rest of the city to know that we're responsible and that we recognize that we have a huge percentage of the city's budget.
I realize you may have to answer this question very carefully, but you started at the end of September, and 2 months later, the gentleman that hired you, then City Manager Milton Dehoney, was gone. I would think that as a new employee had been here 2 months, that had to be just a little bit concerning.
Just a little. And I've thought about it a lot. A lot of mayors and managers want to have their guy. But I was brought here to do a job. I think I'm doing a pretty decent job so far. I've been here about 7 months. I really do need a lot more time to affect the change and to see if it can be sustainable and whether or not it is difference-making in Cincinnati. So I can't worry about any of those factors. I just have to keep pushing forward and doing what I think is best for Cincinnati.
In just about 30 seconds here, what would you tell us is yet to come for the police department? What's your focus in the, say, next 6 months, 9 months?
Well, we want to have a significant impact on violent crime. We're looking at the beginning of warm weather. I think it's coming. I mean, I don't know. It's sunny today, but it's still kind of chilly.
But it could be cold tomorrow.
It could be cold tomorrow and snowing. Who knows? But as we get warmer, we understand that crime peaks when young people get out of school, and you put that with warm weather. Every city experiences a rise in crime, especially violent crime. So we're prepared to address that spike with Serve and other youth initiatives, and just robust enforcement, if you will, intelligence-led policing. We're not going to over-police, but we hope that we can be a safer city. We have a lot of big things coming. We have the 2015 Major League Baseball All-Star Game, and we're in the running for the RNC, and I think we're going to get it. And if we get that, that's a game changer.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking with Cincinnati Police Chief Jeffrey Blackwell about policing and the city's crime rate. He's been on the job since the end of September. Chief, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical director was Bruce Ellis. With Howard Wilkinson, I'm Jay Hanselman.